Open VoIP 929-299-1269.
Welcome to the SDS conferencing system. There are two other parties in this conference.
From the depths of Lake Michigan, remote viewing from Chicago's northwest side, this is Vintage Cop with Jazz Maz, exclusively on Anon Radio. Now, here's Jazz.
Welcome to Vintage Comp on Anon Radio.
There are three other parties in this conference.
We have three other parties in this conference.
Hello, it's Junkman calling.
Hey, Junkman. Did you see the subject matter of today's call? Welcome.
I'm here to learn about brittle Ataris.
Awesome. Brittle plastics, yes. Three items on the docket for Vintage Comp on Anon Radio tonight are the cheap mods for the Atari 600XL, because the Atari 600XL is a pretty cheap computer if you can find one, but you got to be careful, and there's some gotchas. But also, the mods are pretty inexpensive, and they can give you a pretty nice computer. The second thing on the docket is brittle plastics, and particularly in the 1998 iMac, which just seemed to disintegrate now. But this is a common problem across almost all vintage computers, especially from the 80s for some reason. And then the Apple Lisa 2, why not? Throw that in there, Apple Lisa 2, woohoo. So anyways, Junkman, you're probably very familiar with the Atari 600.
I'm actually not at all.
Oh, really?
I used one in school. We had one way, way back in grade school days.
A 600?
Yeah, with the cartridge we played, I think, River Raid or something on it was what we had on it.
Okay, wow.
And some simple basic things. It was a donated thing.
Okay.
It went along with the 2GSs and Apple IIs we had.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, the 600 is kind of an oddity because for whatever reason, Atari thought that they had to have a lower-end model than the 800XL to compete with VIC-20 and some other computers, things like that, like the really low-cost stuff. And so they made basically a stripped-down 800 with only 16K of memory. It uses the same cartridge slot as, you know, same peripherals, but it only has RF display output. So you can only hook it up to a television. And because of that limited memory and things like that, they're not very well loved. And they actually didn't even sell very well in the day. People would just say, well, why do I want to buy that? I'll spend a little extra money and get an 800. So the 600s, if you can find them, you can get them still fairly cheap. And the cool thing about that is that you got a cheap vintage computer for less than, I don't know, $29 and up, I'll say. $29 and up, you might be able to find it. You might be able to find it at a garage sale for $10 if somebody had one. But the gotchas are that there were several keyboard revisions, and there is a particular Mylar keyboard that you want to avoid, but unfortunately is also the most prominently deployed configuration. But if you can find the mechanical keyboard and you get it for a good price, you can more than likely do a couple of mods that will get you 256K and composite video or even Chroma Luma video output. So
Open VoIP.
And those are pretty inexpensive. The cool thing about the video mod is that most of the PCBs, not all of them, so unlike the keyboard issue, most of the PCBs actually have the silk screen and the holes, all the vias, they're all filled with solder, for the composite mod. Because apparently in some foreign markets outside the U.S., they went ahead and just did the PAL video or whatever for the for those. And then so you can buy a kit for that and get all the components. You get like four transistors, a bunch of resistors, maybe one or two diodes, some jumper wire, and then you get the DIN connector. And the cool thing about the DIN connector is that all you have to do is desolder the channel selector switch, so you'll be permanently on channel 3 if you want to use RF. But then you can just solder in the DIN connector. It's got the holes already there, additional holes besides the switch. So you got your DIN output there with the five pins and pretty readily available display cable. And then if you want to do the 256 kilobyte mod, you'll be stacking chips. Oh, and actually, it's a little scary. I think Junkman will appreciate this. It's the way that you get this particular RAM chip to work in this machine is use a RAM chip that is not pin compatible, and you offset it by two pins. So it's like already scooted down a bit, and then you stack the RAM chips on top of each other and solder the legs together. It's called the Jeff Pop 256K memory mod. So
Jeff, like Juliet, you're saying?
Yeah, Jeff, J, Juliet, Echo, Foxtrot, Foxtrot. P-O-P-P, so Papa, Oscar, Papa, Papa. Yeah, and I got those from Best Electronics, which is a long-time supporter of Atari gear out in California. Pretty inexpensive.
Is there some visual clue that you could tell the bad keyboard from, if you were going to roll the dice with eBay?
Gosh, actually, if you look at the picture I posted on Mastodon, sometimes you can tell because the control key has an outlined box rather than a solid white box. The Mylar ones almost always have a solid white box on the control key and the clear set tab key. So that's kind of a telltale.
So you think that, like, if you're rolling the dice, you would think the one you posted is a Mylar keyboard?
No, that one's a mechanical keyboard.
Oh, that one's mechanical.
Yeah, I think it's made by Matsushita, made it. And those are, there are two versions of those, apparently, and they're more or less the same desirability. One of them has... what are those little trapeze pieces, like under the shift key, like larger keys have? You ever seen
those? The little bar, connecting bar?
Yeah.
I don't know what it's called, but I know what you're talking about.
It's like this little trapeze thing, and it helps to keep the key level as you're pressing it, right? So apparently there are two versions of this Matsushita keyboard, and the one that I have, only the shift key as the trapeze piece, but on another rev, they put trapeze piece under the control and the clear set tab. So just so you have, it has a slightly better feel because of that. You know, if you've ever hit a key where it's bigger than the switch it's sitting on, typically it'll tip over a bit and might get stuck or something even.
So yeah.
That's kind of the fix that they have those in. But anyways, yeah, I think if you find the outline clear and outline control, just like you see there, you're more than likely going to get the mechanical keyboard because the key caps are not You can't just swap
open
them
VoIP
with the Mylar
929-1269.
Because they use a different mechanism. They don't use, like, that Cherry-style switch.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you see one for $10 on eBay, buy it now, and it's got an outline around control, buy it.
All right. Yeah, no, I'm always keeping. Sometimes you just don't know what you're looking at. I don't know anything.
Yeah.
And I've only ever touched that one.
Yeah.
We had in grade school, and probably because it was a 600, and people were like, well, I can't do anything with this.
Wow.
They donated it. And
yeah. Yeah, that 16K memory limitation is, I guess that's a really big deal, but, you know, in 2022, it's, and even 20 years ago, it wasn't that big of a deal because, you know, you could do a stack mod pretty easily,
yeah,
if you were savvy. But this 256K mod, that one takes a little bit more effort. It's more upper intermediate mod.
What would you use 256K for?
There are new games that and demos,
oh, okay,
that people have done, and then there's something called Spartadoss. It's a disk operating system written for the Atari that uses a RAM disk.
Oh.
And so if you have 256 kilobytes of RAM, you know, you can really take advantage of that. But Jazzmaz is the real Atari expert. You know that. He's not here tonight. he convinced me to get, and I haven't even tried it yet because I'm going to have to do all the mods on the 600 before I even try playing with it. He told me to get the, SIO to something. It's a device that hangs off the SIO port and lets you get on to some kind of Atari network.
Oh, the, what the heck is it called? The, I have that on my Apple, too. Is it the
okay
same thing I'm talking about? What the heck?
FujiNet.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about the other one. Itera Online or something.
Oh, okay. Well, either way, I'm really looking forward to that, and it's going to be a lot of fun to get that. And the 600 I got was super cheap, and it was just I lucked out because I probably wouldn't have got one if it wasn't offered to me for so cheap. But yeah, the 600 you used looked like that, or you're
not?
Oh,
I'm looking at pictures. That's exactly what it was. I mean, I was really young when we.
Oh, okay.
And I just
wow
remember everybody wanted to use it because they had the game cartridges.
Right.
You know, that
yeah
was probably, you know, third or fourth grade or something when. And when we had that, and you know, the people would donate computers, and that's how we got computers.
Oh, I see.
So it was Apple's, and then somebody donated that.
Mm-hmm.
We had a Model 1 for like a little bit, but that.
Oh, the TRS-80?
Yeah, that didn't last long with little kids, you know, with the ribbon cables and everything else.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Wow. The XL stuff is pretty interesting. I originally wanted to get a 1200, but I think I'm glad that I ended up finding the 600 because I like the fact that I can make it just as cool as a hopped up modified 800.
Yeah.
And then I found out that there were actually design drawbacks on the 1200, even though it was supposed to be kind of a high end Atari, you know, Atari 8-bit, and they actually chintzed a bit on it, and it was, you know, still over $1,000. So after reading about that, I was just like, oh, okay, well, I'll go for the low end and roll the dice and get lucky.
Yeah.
So
yeah, Ataris were not, it was basically, out here it was Tandy country with mixes of Commodore 64s.
You're in the Northeast?
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
my
I mean,
gosh.
Well,
I didn't
everything
know that.
At Tandy's because we had two Radio Shacks in town.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, so it was, we had the Radio Shack at the mall and then the Radio Shack that was the mini mall, you know, strip
I see
mall. So
I always
had TR-80s.
I always thought that Tandy was kind of a Texan thing.
I think it was if you lived in a like suburb or smaller town and you had a Radio Shack.
Okay. I guess Radio Shack was pretty widespread nationally then.
Yeah, I mean, 2,000-something stores or whatever it was. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
They even had Radio Shack, you know, up in New Hampshire and stuff. And really, that was your only option to get a computer up there. Where my uncle lived, and he had that, too. He had Tandy's.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't know if I ever saw anything with... I remember Radio Shack when they were trying to sell Sprint cellular service, and that's about it. I don't remember anything before then, but that was pretty well after any computer stuff. But I can imagine
that was probably in their Compaq era.
Gosh, I wonder what Radio Shack was like in the 70s and 80s. Then that must have been pretty awesome to see.
Well, they had that computer center thing.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, they had dedicated stores that were just computer centers.
Oh, man, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Holy cow. God.
But they had 2,000 or whatever stores when they came out with the TR-80. And their first run of TR-80s, they made just enough to have one in each store. And if they figured if it didn't sell, then at least they can use it for bookkeeping.
Oh, okay.
And it became, they couldn't make enough of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's, they figured, hey, there might be something to this whole microcomputer thing.
Huh. Okay. And so that was before they did selling cell phones and stuff like that, obviously.
Yeah, that was in the 80s. That was in the 80s.
Okay. Wow. So do you have any computers in your collection with plastic that is, like, super brittle, easily chips, easily cracks, easily falls, crumbles in your hands, like...
No, I don't really have that. I don't know if that maybe that's a hotter environment problem. I don't...
Oh.
I have the yellow, really yelling stuff.
Oh, okay.
I can't really think of anything that I have that crumbles like that. You know, I have... Apples, Commodores, Vicks.
Okay.
Lots of Tandys.
Okay. Yeah, this I was going to do an exhibit with the university here, and they specifically wanted a late 90s iMac, and if they could get a 1998 iMac, that would be great. And I was like, well, I have a G4 Cube. Is that cool enough? And there's like, no, that's from 2002. You know, that's too new. So I couldn't get it in the display. And I thought, okay, well, you know, maybe I can find a Bondi Blue iMac.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't mind that, you know, to just have that as a historical piece. And I found one at probably more than what... what's his name? Robert 588 would be willing to pay.
Yeah.
But it was still a fair price because it's like there's a lot of people that are trying to sell Bondi Blue 1998 iMacs for like $1,000, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of ridiculous. So anyways, I found one owned by one person. You know, they used it. They enjoyed it. It was, you know, probably just... was unboxed in their house, and then maybe they put it in the basement or the closet when they were done or something like that.
Maybe the attic is what did it.
Maybe the attic. It could be that. But anyways, so I bought it, and then they had FedEx, like, supposedly professionally pack it. They, you know, they charged them, I think, like $26 just for packing it up. So they packed it up, and they just they use that spray foam in the bags.
Yeah.
So that was probably the first thing they did is they didn't wrap the unit in bubble wrap. That would have been good if they had at least done that. But what they did is they just used that suspension foam sprayed in bags.
Open VoIP 929.
Put the iMac in there. And then for the additional padding, they just use craft paper, you know.
Oh.
So no air padding.
Did they have CRT facing down? Because that's really the only.
Yep. They didn't do that. Always ship. That's one thing, folks, if you're listening, always ship CRTs down. In fact, when the SDF traveling 605 terminal gets shipped, it gets shipped in a CRT case, actually. It was for a much larger tube.
Yeah.
But it goes face down. And the whole reason why is because there's an implosion lens there, and that really protects. That's a really durable surface. That's why it's facing you. It's like you don't want any other side of the tube facing you. It's like the implosion lens is there to save you.
It's also because of, you know, it's bolted to the plastic frame.
That's true, too, yes.
And you have the weight of the neck and all that stuff resting
yep.
on that. And if you just a little drop is a lot more force than all focused on that little plastic frame.
Yep. Yeah. So the iMac is, internally, the structure is a mix of aluminum and steel. And it's pretty rigid steel, too. But like you said, Junkman, there's a frame that goes around the CRT. There's also a steel band that goes around the implosion lens between the CRT and the implosion lens, too. So that's also another piece of weight and something that's, you know, structurally sound. The problem is then there's this exoskeleton on the iMac that is just plastic. And it's different kinds of plastic. And in this case, there is an internal kind of tannish, white, off-whitish, opaque plastic band that could just it goes around the CRT. It goes just over the top of the CRT, and then it goes around the speakers and the CD, read-write player.
Yeah.
And then the speaker grill. And the bezel surrounding the CRT, those just pop into it, and they just kind of clip in. And then the color, whatever color they want to put on the iMac, you know, then all of that is modular. They can just go pick and choose. But the stock stuff, there's those pieces.
There are four
the speaker
other
grill,
parties
of course,
in this
is
conference.
Its own color. But what happened was, yeah.
Guess who?
Hey, Jazzmaz. I think that the FedEx shipper, okay, it was a combination of FedEx store not packing properly and not knowing how to pack a CRT display, because that's basically what an iMac is.
Yeah.
And then this particular formula of opaque plastic that's in the inner structure of the iMac.
I wonder if it's the same plastic they made the late 90s Trinitrons out of. That
probably. But yeah, it's like.
Once you pick those up, and their guts will just fall out.
Yeah, it's like, it's almost like whatever binder that's in there is outgassed, and whatever's left behind is just kind of this very delicate eggshell / peanut butter structure that, or sorry, peanut brittle structure that you can just break it off in little pieces in your hand, and it just turns into tiny.
Yeah, that's the way the Trinitrons were, like the heat or whatever.
Yeah.
And like those TVs were, you know, the 36 inch.
Yeah, some of the early ABS cases are like that now too. That
even ABS.
Yeah.
ABS typically holds up fairly well.
Usually does. It depends on how thick it is. Like some of like the really early PC monitors.
Yeah.
I think we're ABS, but we're, you know, very thin.
Okay.
And didn't have much extra support, so you have had a tendency to, like, over time they would just get brittle. And some of that too is that they're sitting in window, you know, sitting on a desk in front of a window for, you know, 10 years of its life, and then it goes into an attic and.
Yeah. Hey, so Jazzmaz, have you ever seen an iMac with that inner plastic piece? That inner plastic structure that just kind of crumbles away?
I don't know that I've seen those. Which models were those?
This is the original 1998 iMac.
was that the original colored IMAX?
Yeah,
like,
the
so I have a lime green one, which was sort of first gen. That was like a 333 megahertz power PC.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it from 99 or 2000?
I don't know. I think it was a first gen, but because I think they originally offered them in like three colors or something like that, and then they shortly after expanded it to like five or something.
Okay.
And they were PowerPC based, and then there were also these sort of intermediate machines that were kind of all-in-one monitor PowerPC based machines, but they were in, you know, beige enclosures. And I think they were like, what, 6400 series or something like that, or 50-something. I forget. They were sort of like targeted at the educational market. But yeah, I've got one that is pretty much a parts machine at this point because the flyback transformer died on it.
I don't know if it's the same part you need. yeah, I'm looking at the frame. It's shattered on the one on his picture there.
Yeah, so mine's still intact. It's in pieces. It's dismantled it in storage, but I haven't touched it in quite some time. I think the
other. Why do you have it taken apart?
Because the flyback failed on it, and I was going to see if I could find a replacement for it, and just never got around to it. Also, I wanted the drive out of it to archive it. And I think the other thing that broke on it too is when I was taking it apart or partially reassembling it, the monitor connector, quality of the metal in the screw down for the D-sub miniature type connector on there, not so great.
Okay.
I literally managed to break it, torquing it with my hand, with my index finger and thumb.
Wow.
I'm like, really?
I think the 90s Apple stuff, I'd be more worried about the
brittle. That's always a problem. Yeah. I was pulling out stuff for the auction for Vintage Computer Festival Midwest, and it's like, okay, I guess I'll get rid of one of my spare 1702s. Mm. And it's like, oh, that looks really rough. I'm like, let's leave it on for a while. Maybe the caps will reform on their own within reason, and it'll work magically again.
Speaking of which, you said... Magic word, Midwest. When is it?
That is September 10th and 11th.
Oh, wow. is it possible to send the 605 traveling terminal to you?
So I was not planning on having an exhibit again this year. I wanted the ability to kind of just come and go.
Oh, yeah, enjoy it. Okay.
Probably next year will probably be a yes, I would think.
Okay.
But this year we'll hold off.
Okay, that sounds fair.
Otherwise, I would say yes. Yeah, I'm still a little leery about, you know, how behavior is going to be there and whether or not I feel like I want to stay the entire day.
No problem.
Kind of thing.
Okay, no problem. Cool, but you mentioned it's there. That's good.
It's there. It's going to be in the same place it was last year, which is in Elmhurst, Illinois.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I bet that hotel is just going.
It's booked.
You guys,
it was booked solid like by day two of.
Oh, good. they're probably like, you know what, guys, any year that we gave you grief about having your computer festival at our hotel, any time we gave you any kind of grief, we're sorry, we're so glad you're here this year.
Right. They were never really that they were happy to have us because they've done events like ours before. Often what they do is like Xbox gamers or PS3 gamers or whatever PlayStation version is current, I forget.
Okay.
You know, we'll have their events there sometimes. So they're not completely not used to having, you know, techie groups in there doing. But their biggest thing is probably weddings.
Oh, okay.
Wedding receptions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we have to be a little careful about that, because I think when we first were negotiating the space, we were like, well, you know, that time of year, you know, it's sort of the last round of weddings for the year, and we want to kind of keep. And then it's like they probably realize it's like, oh, yeah, okay, they're booking our room solid, so, you know, we don't care. Yeah.
Right, right, yeah, and they're probably not going to party as hard as a wedding party.
Yeah. So, oh, that reminds me of the one ECCCC, Too Many C's show, which was the predecessor to, you know, it was jointly with and preceding this iteration of Vintage Computer Festival Midwest, mm-hmm. Where we had a drunken wedding reception that... So we used to, after that, they would close the business center, and we would just typically all congregate in the hotel lobby and hang out, the late night people, and we got overcrowded by the drunken revelous wedding party that they had also booked that weekend.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, fortunately... the hotel, when I was booking my room, they're like, oh, yeah, you're with the organizers, right? Do you want a suite or something? And I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. And they're like, and they're like, we'll give it to you at the nominal rate, which was $64 a night that year.
Mm.
So it's like, a suite for $64? Yeah, sure, give it to me. Mm-hmm. And we had a bird's eye view of local law enforcement coming and going, taking people out.
Mm.
So, oh, and they also set off the fire alarm.
Oh, jeez.
Late at
That's
night, so that was
cool.
Great. Yeah.
That's not cool.
I shouldn't say set it off. They broke the fire alarm, the fire suppression system, which triggered the fire alarm.
I see.
They broke one of the sprinkler heads in one of the hallways.
Oh, no. That's serious.
I had a literal waterfall down the one hallway. So, yes, we are much better behaved than some mm-hmm. wedding parties, you know, wedding receptions.
No insurance claims here.
Yeah.
So
Worst thing is magic smoke.
Oh, right, which dissipates after some it
after
smells
a little
worse
bit of time.
Than it actually is.
Yes.
So you didn't see this iMac photo that I posted with the inner plastic bezel that just crumbled. It's like,
no, I did not get a chance to see that. Do I have to? Is that on Mastodon?
Yeah, it is. It's fractured all over the place. And basically, you know, Junkman and I were already talking about the steel inner frame.
Yeah.
Just kind of decimated it, you know, with each gravitational pull.
Yeah, because I remember there was sort of like a really thin metallic inner shielding over certain parts on the one that I have.
Okay, yeah, on the back side, there is that kind of paper foil.
Yeah.
So that's not the issue in this one. It's this opaque plastic inner housing that things like the infrared, the power button, the speakers all mount into.
I'm pulling up Mastodon right now.
Yeah.
So
it sits underneath the CRT frame, which
mm-hmm.
is steel. And so because of the way that they had placed it in the box with the inadequate packing, it just like, and probably a gorilla of a FedEx delivery person, because they tried to deliver it three times.
They hired the Samsonite gorillas to pack the FedEx box.
And it's 47 pounds. They tried to deliver it three times. I'm sure
that's just like the model I have.
Threw it back in the truck. And just
you've
like,
got that composite case. You've got the steel bottom, but you've got the plastic shell underneath it, and then you've got the plastic bezel.
Anyways.
And the plastic top.
Anyways, that inner bezel is just, it's trash.
Yeah.
There's no fixing it. In fact, it's...
Do you want the one I have?
Oh, do you have one?
I have a lime green one, all the parts are, you know, transparent other than the lime green, and it's got a bad, you know, bad flyback on it, but you know, the casing would probably still be okay. The only problem is you know, the CRT is strapped into the into the bezel assembly with, you know, the DAG grounding.
Well, this is for a display that's going to run for a year at University of Washington. But I ended up finding somebody that just had the inner bezel, and I bought it for a decent price.
Oh, well, if you've got it, then you're fine. Then
it'll be
no
on
reason,
its way. But
no
I
reason for me to wrestle
that
one out.
Yeah, I just wanted to point it out that... you know,
yeah, that interior part of that I can see that interior part of the plastic that houses the speakers and
the CD tray goes into
right between it.
So the thing is that there might be other people that have these and they might be considering shipping them or selling them or
mm-hmm.
doing something with them, transporting them.
Make sure they're fully assembled, well packed.
CRT face down.
Yep.
So, yeah, anywho. And then Junkman and I talked about the Atari 600 XL. I got
mm-hmm.
the Jeff Pop mods for the one that I have, and I confirmed that the keyboard I have is, I believe, is Matsusha. I think
mm-hmm.
it's the early revision with only the shift keys having the trapeze bar.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, it's mechanical switch.
Sure.
It's not Mylar. So I'm looking forward to doing the 256K mod, Jeff Pop mod, and the cool thing that when I looked at the PCB and I saw the silk screen is there, all
mm-hmm.
the part identifiers are there for doing the composite mod. All you have to do is get the part.
Populate
plug
it,
in. I thought that just like, oh my God, that's easy.
Does 600 have a serial port?
It's got the SIO port. Jazzmaz, what else does it have?
I don't remember what the 600 XL had on it. I don't actually have one in my collection.
It's the same ports as the 800.
Yeah, so it's going to probably have a left cartridge port and the SIO bus and probably maybe a tape interface.
It has a little blocked off piece that has a PCB edge connector on it.
Right, and there's probably one that was intended because the original 800, 400, well, the 400 only had a left cartridge. The original 800 had a right and left cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
And typically the left cartridges were like language enhancements and utility cartridges and maybe some games.
But I'm talking
I think the right XL. Cartridge, right? Let's
XL
see, where the hell did I put my 800 XL?
Not really fancy.
Probably put it in the basement. I don't recall that they have a serial port on it.
Okay.
They might have a printer port. Well, I think
isn't the SIO port a serial port?
Well, yeah, it's more like an IEC-style shifting serial port, shift register. But it is, and I think that's typically how they did communications also on the Atari. But there may have been some other mods for it. I'm not real familiar because, back in the day, none of my friends who had Ataris had any sort of communications peripherals. And I only recently acquired, recently being a few years ago, but I haven't really done much with them. I've got a 400, some 400 parts, and an 800 XL in my collection.
Oh, I thought you were a big
Atari
person.
No, it was just sort of, once again, there's an active group in the Chicagoland area, so...
Mm-hmm.
I have some adjacentness to that, and I do have some hardware, but I'm not, I'm kind of broad, but, since I was a Commodore kid, I've got a lot of Commodore stuff.
I gotcha.
And then I have a lot of, miscellaneous other, I'll have a single system from a different, I've got a pair of Coco 2s, one that's in kind of rough shape, one that's in decent shape. Not a lot of peripherals for that. I've got my drive wire cable, and I managed to pick up a Glenside IDE controller for that.
Okay. Man, it's so easy to do vintage computing these days. Like, everybody's making everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know the only thing you need is a console, right? And every, you know, everything, and some sort of display technology.
What were you going to say, Junkman?
I say the Glenside IDE, that's old hat. Now they got the Coco STC, which is
Well, I'm not going to pay money for Coco STC. But
they're also, every time they come out, they're sold out.
Right. And the other problem, too, right, the other thing is, right, small production run, something that probably should be cheaper but isn't.
Right. And then when it gets sold out, the prices just shoot through the roof. So
right.
that is a downside for sure.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, on eBay and stuff.
It's why I both like and hate the SD to IEC hardware. It because it's open source. Hate it because it's open source.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, it's great because you can get one, but it's bad because you can get one from someone who, you know, DIY'd their own and made some really horrible choices. And
I guess that is a downside. I mean, the PC Junior accelerator thing Junkman told me about, that's just like a plug-in to the processor, and it gives you a super souped-up CPU and additional RAM and everything, and it just plugs right in.
And it's like, well, why don't you just give me a single-board computer with a...
Well, okay, so yes, there is that too, but the thing is that it's a little more transparent as it gets plugged in, which is nice. You know, that helps. But the downside of it was that the person who designed it was no longer making units. They had all the files available on GitHub.
Right.
So I downloaded them. I went to a Chinese manufacturer. I uploaded all that stuff. They verified with me what I wanted, and then they told me that we can't sell you Sparta 6 CPUs, FPGAs anymore. We can't sell those to you. And so they said, but we can build the whole thing out for you if you want, and then you just install the Spartan 6.
Right, obtain one from another channel and install it yourself, right?
Right. And so there were two things about it. The first thing was that if it really is an issue of a part that is just unobtainium, okay, that's a bad design choice. But it also tells you that all these mods that people make for vintage computers
are all ephemeral.
Yeah, exactly. They're vanishing just as quickly as the, you know, SID chips are. So, but the one thing that got me, though, is that they told me they couldn't sell me chips. I was just like, okay, so that doesn't mean that they're not available.
Right, it's either they're not producing them for our market
or
shipping
them. Right.
Yeah.
I didn't have the required volume. And so that made me think that, okay, so if it was a different company or possibly even just the Chinese government that wanted FPGAs, they could probably get as many as they wanted. But if it was me saying, hey, I want a few boards, I'm building one for myself and a couple for some friends, and no, you can't have Spartan 6, and you cannot have the RAM chips with them either. So I have all these PC Junior accelerator boards without FPGAs and without RAM chips, but otherwise are complete junk, man.
I'm playing around with
and that's when you sit there and go, I wonder what obsolete video system has the Spartan.
I'm playing around with ordering JLB PCB or PCB, I forget which way are the one.
Yeah,
but they offer free assembly,
right?
As long as you buy the parts from them,
right.
So all I do is
if they're available through them.
Yeah, if they're available. I looked out the guy that designed the thing I ordered is it's all GNU open source. He even spelled out how to order it from this website. So I mean, this is me figuring out how to do it. It's basically my trial run of doing this.
Cool.
And you upload the bill of materials and you upload the files and I got hung up because all my the chips were clocked 90 degrees.
Oh.
I was like, I can't figure out how to get these things straight on the website, but there was a click, have, you know, somebody look at it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then some guy, you know, Jack, I think his name was.
Jack.
It's Jack or Jill, the two people that are, you know, from China that always email me back and forth. So we fixed it for you. You just got to click approve. And I was like, all right, cool. And hopefully it shows up and they work. You had a minimum of five I had to order. So we'll see if they all work.
Should be interesting. But, yeah, that is definitely an issue with hardware. One is sometimes it doesn't – they don't tick they don't offer enough – they offer too many they offer features I don't really need and – or not the features that I need, and they cost too much. And then, of course, they're designed with chips that are available at the moment. They never get redesigned.
Yeah.
And then the thing that probably Jim Brain, if you've ever heard him talk on the subject – can talk about is that you know, you run into all sorts of problems where you have people that just can't help themselves, that buy the stuff and, you know, want tech support thereafter, or even worse, they'll buy like say the one thing that's always notorious for that is the SD to IEC. Jim Brain manufactures a variety of them known as the UIEC or micro IEC.
Yeah.
And often people will come out of the woodwork and they'll say, well, I'm having problems with this or that. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. You don't have a UIEC. You have an SD to IEC that you bought from some random guy off of eBay.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, maybe if you post to the forum, someone may take pity on you, but...
Yeah.
Well, whenever those type of things, like the Cocoa SDC or whatever, I've now come to the conclusion is you think you might want it, but just buy it because it is. There'll be limited runs, and it may not ever be again.
That's right. Yeah, you got to act fast if it shows up. Robert 588 has mentioned that too. It's just like, you know, as soon as it shows up, especially if you get on the. On the list for notifications on that, and you get it in the morning, you better buy it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, if it's something you want, certainly. For me, I'm kind of grouchy and grumpy, and I've got a lot of other solutions to various other other needs, and it's like, well, do I really want to spend $100+ on this newfangled gadget when I can still use the old fangled gadget to do the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, it's nice because it's all in one small package.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives me some additional bells and whistles, but, I know, my cheapness. You know, I inherited that from my Depression-era family members.
Speaking of cheapness, did you also happen to see the Apple Lisa 2 that the Interim Computer Museum has acquired?
Oh, really?
Yes. Single owner with receipts.
Driven to church once a week only.
I won't tell you how much was paid, but I...
I can kind of imagine how much was paid for it.
Fortunately, it was low enough that it was like, you're not going to get a chance to do this again. You better do it now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically why it ended up.
It's within my budget, discretionary budget, and if I don't buy this one now... I will probably never find one at that price ever again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right. You know, and it came with everything, which is really cool because it was not a hand-me-down. It wasn't one that kind of got...
separated from its keyboard and other peripherals.
And it has the, you know, it's got the proper Lisa 2 mouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the skinny mouse, which works on the Lisa 1, too. And it came with not only Lisa Office, which is a little more readily available, the Lisa 7.7 stuff, but the original Lisa manual set, too, which some eBayers think is worth $2,000.
Wow.
So, yes. I thought, okay, you can handle this. It's okay. It's not a car. It's less than a car. It's not even a used car, which is fortunate enough. But I just thought, never again that I would come across something like that.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You know about the vintage.
Yeah, yeah, I know. But things that are desirable and uncommon that go for a lot of money sometimes will shake out in some other channel, and it'll be reasonable. May not be cheap, but it may be reasonable for what it is. And
yeah.
Have you ever really
sat down and used a Lisa before?
No, I have never used a Lisa before.
Oh, really? Okay.
No. Well, you know, that's not true. I've tinkered with them at shows on occasion, but
okay.
You know, to actually do any real work back in the day on them, no.
Okay. They're actually a pretty interesting experience because they have some UI ideas that are a little more deeper than what happened with the Macintosh.
Mm-hmm.
You can see a lot of the things that got inherited and simplified
from the Xerox.
Yeah. But you can also see the ideas that came from Xerox PARC.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like all the steps of dimming the screen and, you know, all these gradations and things that you can do with you know.
But the question that everyone wants the answer to is,
yeah.
Does it have simulated rounded corners on the display?
Right. Yes, right. The other thing, too, is in the Lisa, the build quality is just, you know, now you know why it was a $10,000 computer.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it was really designed very, very well as a piece of industrial kit.
Mm-hmm.
And it has more of a nod, definitely a nod back to mini computer construction as opposed to microcomputer construction.
Yeah.
Even beyond what S100 was doing. It's
right.
More in line with Xerox, like in the Dolphin or the Dorado, that kind of, they were larger systems, of course.
Right, that you may have had a microprocessor on it, but there was still a lot of discrete logic and special purpose boards in it.
Yeah. And very well documented, or at least laid out boards that you can read and identify with part identifications on them, I should say. So it you know, industrial design wise, it's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And now I know why they ended up in a landfill in Logan, Utah. Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that where they supposedly
maybe.
A lot of them ended up?
Is that a legend thing, like the buried Atari cartridges?
It probably is a legendary thing. The idea was is they did a production run and they were just not ready in the sense that they were kind of expensive for what they were, and IBM was already kind of owning the PC market at that time.
Yeah.
The guy that I got it from who bought it originally, he was completely sold on the idea of this computer, such that, you know, that he like went out, all out on it. And so it was really interesting to hear his perspective because, he was the ideal candidate for purchasing this computer. He had enough money and a business. Because it was designed to be a business computer. You know, that's like all the brochure information points to that. It wasn't going to be like they were going to
Wasn't going to be
leases.
A special purpose education machine.
Exactly.
Right.
They weren't going to put leases in K-12, you know, like flood them like they did with the Apple
II. So like they could barely, K-12 can barely afford notepads and pencils, let alone leases, right?
And chalkboard.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, my high school was still using chalkboards.
But
it's like smartboard. What's that?
Smartboard.
Smartboards make you dumb.
I don't think I've ever seen a smartboard on.
I have.
Really?
I have.
What is it?
So they are a rear projection kind of imaging system, and that it has some type of tracking system so that it can, you know, basically follow the markers in your hand.
Oh,
and
wow.
Things like that. And Microsoft made a number of these. I encountered them in, of all places, at one of the universities in Durango, Mexico. And then I think some of the charter schools in the Chicago area were Microsoft-sponsored schools, and they got a few of those as well as part of the deal at the time I was doing after-school programs. But we never had access to any of that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, so they probably had a few for, you know, probably gifted classes and things like that.
I got it.
But, yeah, I've seen one in action. It's kind of janky. Was kind of janky, but it kind of worked. It's like, you know, the idea is it was supposed to be able to basically work like a whiteboard and, you know, overlay projected images onto it and do things like symbol recognition so that when you write things on the board, it can then digitize them and save them for later. Mm-hmm. It was interesting technology. But I don't know how much that is permeated. I don't know how ubiquitous that became. You know, whiteboards, yes. Smart boards,
not so yes.
Not so much, as far as I know.
Well, if you want to talk about the Vintage Computer Festival Midwest coming up next month, that would be really cool in the last 3 minutes. And I will get ready for Synth Battle Royale.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you, Jazz Mass, and thank you, Junk Fan, for calling in.
No problem.
Yeah, it was fun.
Right. Always interesting.
Yeah, so I guess we're down to our last three-ish, maybe two-ish minutes of time. This is Vintage Comp in the open VOIP slot every... technically Saturday morning at 0200 hours, UTC. Synth Battle Royale is coming up next in the open mic slot. And once again, I guess I will remind people that the Vintage Computer Festival Midwest is coming up fast, September 10th and 11th in Elmhurst, Chicago. Visit vcfmw.org for more details. I'm not sure how, I think Jason's been a little behind on the publishing of planning info, so I'm not sure if the all of the exhibit listings and talk listings are up yet. Hopefully they will be up soon. There should be details for the hotel information. I know the main hotel that's on site is pretty much booked, so you're going to have a hard time getting a room there, but there are some overflow hotels somewhat nearby. and the thing I learned last year was if you feel like you want to go out, take your car and go off-site, for lunch, be prepared to park it on the street when you get back. and I think that has a maybe parking limitation, like either up until a certain time. So you got to be careful about that. I noticed last year we had a rush of people in the midday on Saturday, and it was a nightmare trying to find. Went out to lunch with a few friends, and it became a nightmare to find parking. So it's like, well, you know, the street I think had parking until 4 or something like that. So it's like, I'll park it on the street, and just before 4, I'll go and see what the parking lot looks like. And I got lucky.
Yeah.
That there were a bunch of people that just, you know, descended on there in the early afternoon for Mookie Lou and then just promptly left. Yeah, they came, they looked, they bought, and then they left. Get on the mic. Get on the mic. But, yeah, I believe usually the talks are recorded on video.